Blog Talk Radio.
Right now, whether you're a brother or whether you're a mother, you could feel the town of McGuanago breaking as the King for a Day draft was shaken. Look up the lyrics if you're not feeling me. It is another episode here of the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast. Waiting for all my guests to get on board here. I am your host and the commissioner of King for a Day, Rick Goreski. And let me tell you that I could tell by the way they used their walk that there were a lot of ladies' men stationed out here in Mucktown on Sunday. Oh, yeah, boys. Go ahead and ask your ladies if there's anything sexier than a couple of dozen grown men spending an entire day engulfed in fantasy football. Let's see. I know that we are waiting, speaking of sexy sights, we're waiting for Steve Wellman to join us, Steve Wellman of the Meat Puppets. In the meantime, I do know for a fact that, hate to disagree with Tiffany or sound like Agent Mulder, but we're not alone. Also joining us tonight is a man who travels southeastern Wisconsin speaking on topics such as Olive Garden, green or black olives. And Olive Garden, where's the frickin' garden? He's the man in black himself, owner of Lost in the Sauce, Tim Savore. Great to have you back on the show, Tim.
Great to be back, Rick. Glad to be here, and thanks for the great introduction. Loving it.
Hey, is it Savore or Seaver?
Nope, you
got
Savore.
I put a little French flair in there for you.
Yeah, no French whatsoever, but for some reason, that is how it's pronounced.
Savore.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Cool. Just making sure I wasn't butchering it. I said to myself earlier today, I'm like, well, I keep saying it that. I don't know why I would do that unless he told me that that's how to say it. Hey, looks like we do have.
It's only been 5 years.
We have Mr. Sexy himself. The show is about to get real because, as I was saying, McGuanago was a sexy sight this past Sunday. 24 grown men spending the entire day on fantasy football. With me now, Dr. Ruth's doctoral dissertation focused on my guest at this time. He contemplated naming his team Hamburger Helper before settling in on Meat Puppets. Please welcome Steve Wellman.
Good evening.
Steve, welcome to the show that's all about the original Game of Thrones, King for a Day.
Indeed.
Well, I did my best to burn some time while we got you and Tim on board. Tim, I did want to mention that I have to be honest, I didn't know until Sunday that you were a speaker. I happened to overhear a couple of guys talking about the draft, about, you know, talking about you at the draft, and I don't know what you said to them, but they couldn't stop talking about how you touched them. You must be very talented.
I do what I can, Rick. I do what I can.
Yeah. Just throwing a little jokes in there, guys. We got so much to talk about. Christmas came early 2 days ago. The annual King for a Day draft is our topic. Let me ask you guys first, what do you think it is about that day that makes it so fun? Because I'm still on a high, and it's 2 days later. Tim, you want to go first?
I mean, having this been my first time joining you guys for Teen Guns Day, I came in last year, kind of midway through the season, took over a team, did decent, and then just came over and actually got to draft you guys for the first time. And this has been the first time where I've done a redraft league with, you know, 11 other guys in the room with me. And I got to say, if I had the choice, that would be the way I would do it. There's so much more emotion in it. You know, you're not sitting behind a computer where you can freak out in front of, you know, yelling at the computer screen that your pick just, you know, walked off the board two picks before you. You know, you got to kind of hold your composure.
Oh, you can still do that, though, in the room. I've seen it before.
Oh, you can. But there's a part of that where you just don't want them to see you sweat, especially myself going into it. Like I said, first time off, wanted to make it look at least like I knew what I was doing versus kind of what I was doing, which was pretty much playing it by ear on the fly. So, yeah, definitely adrenaline packed that way.
Steve, what do you got?
Well, since I'm an original owner, it's really great to see all the guys. Some guys you don't even see ever or talk to ever except for that one occasion. So there's the whole catching up. There's a whole banter, the whole ribbon of each other between teams and stuff. And yeah, the fact that you actually see it go by, you know, you see the guy get up and you see him walk to the board and you're like, oh, please don't pick them. Please don't. Oh, you did, son of a. So,
is that not music
to
everyone's ears? I think if I could toss something out there, I absolutely think the in-person draft is what separates us. But I think the facility as well. I know it sucks to drive out to Muguanago. Having the ability to kind of be left alone. You know, there's nobody kind of over our shoulders. We're there doing our thing and just getting crazy and being guys and having fun with football, having fun hanging out. It just air conditioning really helps. But anyway, I just wanted to touch on that. Why don't we move over to talk about each conference's draft? We did speak in a previous show, Steve, about the one-year trials for offensive flex and defensive flex lineups that the league is trying out this year, and we speculated what might happen. And, Tim, I know we talked about that the night of the draft. I'd like to ask what you guys saw as far as strategic changes, or how did you adjust to the new rules yourself? So, Tim, it's your turn to start out first on this show, so please lead us off.
Okay, I mean, I really can't speak to how things have changed because, again, this is the first time I've been in there with you guys. But just looking, going off the rosters that I seen last year, going off the rosters that I seen this year, I don't, you know, you didn't see those. People waited on the stud running backs. You know, they knew they could get that stud wide receiver later on. So what that caused was those types of players to start dropping down, and you watch people panic where they're sitting at 2-4 or 2-6, and you still have a guy there that is normally gone in the first five picks of the draft, and nobody can mock for that. So I think a lot of people's draft plans, no matter what you walk in there with, they all changed. And you can see it definitely in the middle rounds of the draft. And I can't speak for the morning draft, but for the night draft, you could see people changing throughout the draft and kind of going different directions all the time.
Steve, do you want to add to that?
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting. We kind of stayed after the draft, and we counted up between the morning draft and the afternoon draft, and there was a decided difference. Now, for those people that may follow both the blogs for King for a Day or vlogs for King for a Day and Mad Dog, most of the, if not all of the Mad Dog participants were in the afternoon draft and not in the morning draft, and I kind of saw the morning draft going the way it was going, as it always did, business as usual. And the more emphasis on offense, where the afternoon draft, people seeing how to take advantage of the new defensive flex rules, really piled on defense early. And I thought it was a kind of and we talked about this before on a different show. I thought that was going to be the case. The people that had the Mad Dog experience kind of seeing how that worked. And I think it kind of also caused the other players in that draft to also kind of see what was going on.
My major predictions were definitely defense would be a higher focus, and I think that did occur. I predicted a run on linebackers early, as some folks chose to strategically grab linebackers, and then the other owners, sensing that the linebackers were starting to get sucked up, would react and go at it, and there would be this massive early run on linebackers. I definitely think that occurred. I think statistically, linebackers were even, I want to say through like 8 rounds, they were even, you know, the most players, they were tied for the most players picked by position. And the other thing that I thought would happen was a run on tight ends, but I thought it would happen in the first half of the draft. The run on tight ends actually didn't happen until the second half of the draft, probably the third quarter of the draft. But those were my two takeaways, you know, my two predictions going in, and I did see that on the way out. Any other comments, guys, before we move on?
No, thanks.
No, all right. Pretty straightforward.
Why don't we dive right into the Gothic Conference, and we had a little bit of a rough start today getting going, so for the sake of time, let's dive into the Gothic Conference. I hope you guys got my latest email. We're going to split this. We originally, for the fans out there, we're going to do one show kind of recapping everything, and we decided to go in a different direction. We're going to cut this into a show today about the Gothic Conference, and tomorrow or the next day it'll be a show about the Renaissance Conference draft. So today it's about the Gothic Conference draft. With all the extra time, we're going to be able to actually go division by division and talk about each team. So we're going to, right off the website, start with the Silver Division, and specifically the team 4U2NV. So, Tim, did you want to, I don't want to put you on the spot if you're not prepared to do this. Do you want to talk about 4U2NV, or do you want me to set the team up? How would you like me to introduce you into this?
No, I've kind of looked the teams over. I could give you a bit of a critique here of how I think he did. Granted, I don't know like where he picked a lot of these guys, but just looking at the team, you know, I do see strength off the bat with Russell Wilson, LeSean McCoy, despite the questions with McCoy right now. Devontae Adams, he's going to be solid, hopefully. Odell Beckham is definitely going to be a top wideout. Got a great depth in Greg Olsen with tight end there. So then he starts moving into his linebackers. He's got Dansby Freeman, Matthews, and Miller. I don't feel he has the strongest linebacking core here. And Mason Foster there towards the bottom. So he is lacking a bit at linebacker, and I think he will suffer for that a bit just because of the offensive flex or defensive flex spot. He's got some running backs in here, Gordon, Jackson, Johnson, and Sims. I think Sims is going to turn on later in the year. He's got Woodhead here, Edelman. Edelman's going to be good once Brady gets back, if Brady gets back, when whatever's going on with Brady. And then he's also got Ty Montgomery, so he's kind of doubling up on the Green Bay receivers there. I'm not sure that's a great idea. And then he just kind of wraps it up. He's got three tight ends, which I think is a bit too much. But he's got Kyle Rudolph and Greg Olsen, so he's got some decent tight ends there. Jordan Reed, he's going to get hurt. We all know it. And he's got a he's going to get hurt. That's all there's to it. And then he's got Rashad Jones to wrap things up, so great DB there. A couple other DBs up top, but I think he just grabbed two of those guys, which is technically, I would say, all you need in case one gets hurt or a bye week replacement, but it's kind of dangerous. I've seen most people taking three. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that for both Steve and Tim, if you don't mind, guys, when you're hitting the teams, feel free to say if you think that they're a playoff contender, because I'd like us to we'll do a prediction show, you know, down the road. We'll, you know, in the next week, we'll do a show predicting who we think will win divisions and take the playoff teams. But I just think for the sake of judging the draft and talking about players, feel free to say if you think, you know, I think this team's going to be a contender, to pick out your top three or four or six player, you know, not six, that's half the league. But go ahead, guys.
Right. So, no, to wrap up this team, looking at it, I don't think they're going to have the strength to make the playoffs. I could be wrong. Fantasy is always luck, but I'm not seeing it right now.
What could you add to that, Steve?
Well, yeah, I don't think this is going to be a playoff team at all. And as a matter of fact, this is a perfect example of a owner that that got stuck in his old ways. I mean, yeah, LeSean McCoy and Melvin Gordon could be good picks, but to blow four picks on running backs that aren't going to do anything when I'm sure there were wide receivers out there he could have picked up. I mean, Fred Jackson and Chris Johnson, please, Fred got cut. Chris, I don't know, he's probably fourth on the depth list in Arizona as well. And, yeah, Charles Sims could be a good pick, but, you know, those four picks of Jackson, Johnson, Sims, and Woodhead, I've got to believe there was more power out there in the wide receiver spot, and he must have completely ignored it. And I don't think he understands that, exactly what he gave up by doing that. You know, he must have been sitting there like, wow, these running backs are out there. I can't believe it. Well, that's why, because people were picking up positions that are going to overpower those. The quarterbacking crew, I guess, is okay. Linebacking crew, I got to believe he could have done better there, too. And to only have five when you can start four, that's inexcusable, in my opinion. You can't go into this league now with five linebackers. You just can't. I mean, that being said, you know, he could have turned those four running backs into wide receivers and linebackers and made it more a team that can contend a little bit more. But this one isn't going anywhere.
Well, it's funny because I have a little different take. I actually had wild card spot written down as a note to myself in the sense that I think he's playoff worthy. He's going to be a contender for a wild card spot, I think, if he can get some help on defense. And for me, Andy Borkowski's team, he took some guys that I'm not personally high on. You know, and by taking a quarterback early, he took a road that I wasn't going to go down unless that quarterback was Luck or Rodgers. But the key in looking at the team is the fact that there are a lot of high-ceiling guys that are on his bench that could push this team into the playoffs if they turn out, namely Melvin Gordon at the top of that list. Edelman, if he can get rolling, get past the injury, and get in sync with Brady. Bork's got Russell Wilson, again, we talked about. Going to get a lot of mileage out of that pick. I love Beckham. I considered Beckham at fifth overall. Greg Olsen right now at tight end is gold. He's the top option in Carolina. So I think he's in for a top three tight end season. Parkey's great at kicker.
Problem,
go ahead.
I was going to say, the problem, though, Rick, is that he didn't hedge his bets in. You know, some of these guys are going to get injured. All of these guys are going to get into the bye week. And he's just got absolutely zero depth. That's why I don't think he has enough to take it to the end of the season.
But he's got
he'll
bounce,
win his fair
yeah,
share
yeah,
of games.
Yeah.
You know,
well, certainly.
I just don't think
that's why I call him a contender. If he can get some help, or if some of these young, you know, like again, like a Gordon, if Gordon pans out into a top 10, top 12 running back, oh, man, you know, that's nice. You know, he's got, on defense, he's got solid guys. There's not a lot of pizzazz. You know, Miller's a boom-bust guy. Matthews would be the same, but he's got the middle linebacker snaps, so that's going to take it up a notch. I'd prefer Jones from Miami in there as a starter. He's got Jenkins in there right now. I think there's some difference in taste here, but I think they're as good as anyone in that they can eventually they can win
well,
and just
I only
make
hope
some
I,
tweaks.
I only hope that I'm the team that plays them in week five and week seven, because he is just absolutely hosed on those 2 weeks. He's got too many guys on bye and not enough guys to plug in.
Well, for the sake of time, guys, let's keep
sure.
it moving. And A-team is next. Strong offensive starters. Tannehill's poised for a breakout. Jamal Charles, Julio Jones would start on everyone's team. What do you guys think of A-team?
This is a team I do like. Tannehill, Flacco, that's definitely a good quarterback setup right there. Jamal Charles and Randall. I mean, you know, Randall's going to be the one hopefully carrying the ball in Dallas. And even if he only does 70% of what DeMarco Murray did, he's in good shape. That wide receiving core, that's pretty tight. He's got Julio Jones and Brandon Cooks. And Charles Johnson, which he's got sitting on the bench, but I think he's going to definitely be a player going into the season. You know, kickers are kickers, whatever, right? He's got a good linebacking crew in Mario Davis out of the Jets. Derek Johnson, if he's healthy, which, you know, maybe he just had a bad ding last year. But if he can stay healthy, he's got Davis, Johnson, and LePolak in Jacksonville. That's pretty good. Not sure what he's doing starting two defensive backs when he's got guys like Thomas Davis and Denzel Perryman, who put up a fantastic game this last preseason game. So I think he's going to see that those are guys he's going to want to start instead. But the good thing with this guy is that he's got depth. He's got, you know, he's got Charles and Randall starting, but he's got Abdullah sitting back there, and he's got Reuben Randall and Doug Baldwin, which are always two quality backups. And like I said, even though he's not starting all his potential linebackers, he does have Davis, Morgan, and Perryman. That's pretty good. A little too much emphasis on defensive line. I should say the wrong emphasis. I don't know why you would start Sue instead of Wilkerson or Jordan, but that's his call. But I like this team. This team could go.
My note on Scott's team, Scott Phillips, was I see the power to trade here to fill holes down the road because he does have a deep bench and he's got some high upside guys. Tim, what do you think?
I agree completely with you guys here. This was actually my number two team overall when I was looking at things, is the how well they drafted. His main thing here is, yeah, the depth. And right now, just looking at how he's starting everything, if I have to play this guy, I can only hope it's early on before he figures out exactly how to use this team, because he is going to be
yep.
dangerous, and I would mark this as a definite playoff contender. This guy could probably throw away guys that would start on other people's teams. So, like I said, I hope if I do have to play him, I hope it is early on before he gets rolling.
I do want to point out that place kicker here is Hartley, which initially looked good because the Steelers' job is great, but the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken, traded for Josh Scobie yesterday. So maybe Hartley won't keep that job, and there is no backup place kicker here. So once again, we have an owner who doesn't cover himself at the draft, and he may get bit by that at the end in week one.
That's yeah, that's okay. I mean, he's got, like...
You think he's going to be okay? I think it's worth pointing out because every year we have that where guys take that risk, and I think they lull themselves into a false sense of security. It is a risk. If you do not take backups and you hog guys at other spots, you could end up in trouble with that, and there should be nobody to point to but yourself because you're the GM and the coach.
Right, and I mean, in an instance, if you know they didn't back up their quarterback or they didn't back up their tight end, I would tend to agree with you more. Whereas kicker, I don't tend to. I mean, that one, it's a fantasy strategy, you know. So you end up getting a guy that will end up scoring you 120 points a year versus 160 points a year. It's not as detrimental to your team to the advantage that you might land a guy on your bench that you could trade. You know, trade away. Like, and that's the situation he's in. So
that's kind of my point, though, is he built this big bench up, and potentially the season didn't even start, and he already has a hole that he's going to have to trade to fill because a roster must be valid to start the season, and it has to be filled with players currently on NFL teams. So, I mean, he could end up in a situation where he's got to make a trade if he doesn't have a kicker. I got to go back.
You can probably pick up a kicker yet.
Well, there's no free agent moves in Kingford A until week two. So there's a thing in the rules. I don't remember it off the top of my head right now, but we clarified that rule this offseason. But, needless to say, I think that was definitely worth pointing out. Let's move on to Damage Inc. We're definitely moving at us. We're going a lot longer than I thought we will, but we're going to just keep her going and get through as much of this as we can. Maybe continue on if we get cut off. Damage Inc. got crack-a-lackin', as my cousin Travis Alkenberg would say, diving right in with Andrew Luck off the top, but found some trouble filling out his offensive flex. Tim, do you want to start off on Damage Inc.?
I'd have to agree with you here. I see a strong start, but then I think when things opened wide for him, I think he lost his draft strategy a bit here. But I mean, he didn't do terribly. Like, I think this is good. This would be like my wild card spot here. But a little out of the way there with Greg Jennings. I don't think Greg's really. I think Greg's done. Roddy White, despite having him in another league, I think he's going to see a decline this year. Good upside with Terrence Williams, but he's going to be a boomer bust guy. He's not going to be a guy you can try out there every year. Darren McFadden, I think that's just a huge miss. And I don't know why fantasy footballers are not, like, cursing this guy's name, you know, burning jerseys, everything else. He disappoints year in and year out. Moving on from that, going down to the D, he got some good starters with Jackson and Ogletree, you know, KJ Wright, Daryl Smith. So, I mean, he's got a good linebacking core down there. To wrap up his defense, and with Morgan Burnett sitting back with Jonathan Joseph and Charles Woodson, you've got some strong – he's got a really good D. So I'm thinking maybe he went hard there but didn't veer back enough onto offense to cover the whole team.
I got it down a note that he – very nice team, but he's going to need some luck on offense. He's got some guys that he's going to need to find one or two starters out of. Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, defense solid, real solid defense. I like the defense. Obviously, the two kickers are fine. Two tight ends are great. I just don't see why people were picking up some of these people if they weren't their handcuffs. You don't pick up Darren McFadden unless you have Joseph Randall. You don't pick up Miles Davis unless you have Jamal Charles.
I'm telling you right now, I loved the move of poaching Niall Davis. I wrote a note down that that's just such a smart move because he's short on offense. Charles has been injured in the past. One little injury from Jamal Charles and Damage Inc. has one of those starters that we're talking about that he's missing on offense.
Right, but if it doesn't get injured, then he has nothing. And if I'm not mistaken, Jamal Charles played the, if not all, most of the season last year. So, you know, and like Tim pointed out, Darren McFadden, unless you have Randall, it's inexcusable to have that guy on your roster. The handcuff might actually get injured before the starter in this case. you know, he could injure himself coming out of the tunnel in the first week. So, so he's gonna struggle offensively. Greg Jennings, I think, again, yes, he's not gonna do very well. Roddy White in this league, Roddy White works because Roddy White catches touchdowns. So that's okay. And well, and he still does. I think he scored like 8 or so last year. So that's not terrible. For your option. Just like, you know, I was talking to Tim at the draft about Terrence Williams, that Terrence Williams is not a bad pick because that's all he does. He just catches touchdowns. He doesn't, you know, obviously Dez is the guy, but when they get close or inside the 20, they tend to double up on Dez, and Terrence Williams is a good target there. So not to take up too much time, love the defense. Defense is strong. Tight ends are strong, but his offensive flex is going to need some tweaking.
Agreed. Next one up, the team, the Pale Riders, as my kids fight in the background. Pale Riders, I have to disclose that I drafted most of this team, so I'm completely biased. I actually really like Tom Buckle's roster. I liked it better than my own team in the PM draft. And I think just great offensive flex with lots of guys on the bench, young guys, and really strong on defense. As I drafted this, I tried to draft it a little bit the way that Tom would have drafted it. What do you guys think of the Pale Riders?
I'll go first on this one.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, you? Okay. Well, I will. This is an excellent draft for a dynasty league, no doubt about it. But in a redraft win this year league, this one's kind of sketchy. And I only say that because I think Jameis Winston is a stretch, and I see that he's starting him.
Now, just in week one, Tom feels that the matchup against the Titans, Manning will be the normal starter.
Yeah, well, if I recall correctly, Eli Manning actually destroys Dallas every time he plays them. So
I'm not going to excuse him. Telling you what he
said. Yeah, I'm not going to excuse him for that one. C.J. Anderson, good pick. Jeremy Hill, well, if you got to, you have to.
Did you just say you have to?
If you know, if that's all you got, I guess you have to. What are you,
you
do
know how
Jonathan
many
Stewart?
The guy put up, I think, and I'm going to look for you right now. I could have swore he put up over 1,200 yards last year, 1,124 yards and 9 touchdowns. He's got the old Oakland coach over there as his offensive coordinator, and they pound the rock with Jeremy Hill in Cincinnati.
Right, but in our league, that doesn't mean a whole ton of beans. We talked about this before, where you have those 20-20 backs. He's a 20-20 back. When they get inside the and then they get in the scoring position, then they bring in Giovanni Bernard, and that
not at all.
He's got
nine. He's got 9 touchdowns. He's regulated Giovanni Bernard to a change of pace, pass catching back. I mean, the guy, again, 9 touchdowns and another one in the playoffs. He is their goal line back. He is their stud runner. I was surprised, I'll be honest with you, leading into the season. I didn't think a lot of Hill until I really read up on him and realized that he really has surpassed Giovanni Bernard, and he's kind of the man there now. But if we disagree, we disagree. That's cool. What else do you think?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, Giovanni Bernard had 7 touchdowns last year. Where do you think he got those from? Yeah, inside the 20. But anyways, I digress. Defense, Brian Cushing is always a gamble. Brandon Graham, I'm not totally sure how Philadelphia is going to play their linebackers, but the David Jenkins, Keekly, that's good. Shazier, I would have actually started either Brandon Marshall or Brian Cushing and just see how Shazier plays out. Mario Williams, good defensive lineman. Delaney Walker, Tyler Eifert, that's good. But this is another guy that's going to have to probably watch the waiver wires. I don't understand why people don't make sure that they have people to fill their spots. And then he's gonna have to give up somebody fairly decent or drop somebody fairly decent to play somebody. And you know, he's going to lose a lot of guys in week 11. And if you're looking to pick up somebody in the waivers that late, you're probably going to be out of luck. So,
did you say he had a hole, though? What he seemingly has
no, doesn't have backup. He doesn't have a hole. The problem is everything's solid, but players get injured, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I just don't see where he's real light on defensive lineman and defensive back. Well, if one of those guys get injured, he's going to have to drop somebody or trade out to get somebody to fill in for a bye week, and I just think that's such a stupid strategy.
He's got the same as most everyone in the league, though, Steve, and he's got two. And I'm saying this not because I drafted the team. I don't quite understand. That's why I asked you to clarify. Most everybody in the league took 2 defensive linemen and defensive backs. You only have to start one. And he's got enough linebackers to cover all of his defensive flex. So he took a backup defensive back to cover himself if he needs it.
Right. But, again, Michael Griffin gets injured. Antoine Bethea goes on bye in week 10. He's looking at week 10 into the waiver wire. Good luck finding something there.
I'm trying to drive more into the reasoning of what you're saying in the sense that anybody in the league could get injured at any given week. I don't think I would wrap a team in our discussions here because, you know, they took a backup. They can't predict whether a guy is going to get hurt or not. You know, I guess I'm saying I can't see you faulting the guy. That's where I'm kind of stopping you on it, is that you can't fault the guy for taking he took a backup. He did cover himself. So I don't know. He can't predict if an injury happens. All he can do is react when and if an injury happens. And that's what I was looking for clarification is. It sounded like you said he's got a hole.
No, he doesn't have a hole. I just said that he has the potential that if somebody gets – he doesn't have a way to get out if somebody gets injured. And that was the philosophy. And to be honest with you, I wound up getting caught myself not doing that, and I'm looking at my own roster thinking, oh, my God, I hope nobody gets injured because – I'm hurting, but I don't want to take all the time away from Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Anyway, while you two guys are battling it out over here, I'm taking a look at this team, and I do got to say that I had this down as my number three. Steve is right, though. I mean, there's some risk there. Jameis Winston obviously is below robust, but Eli is a starter. So, CJ Anderson, I like the guy. Jeremy Hill, I like that pick, too. The only place I thought this team wavered a little bit, and maybe it was the situation in the draft, but I thought they were heavy on running back. Any team that I've seen that really kind of ripped into running backs, I mean, I just don't see the value in it in a league that offers flex when you can start wide receivers so deep, and the wide receivers just are pretty steady. But I like Yeldon. I like Yeldon sitting down there on the bench. Anybody out of the New England running game, I have given up on years ago. Although I did kind of like Blunt this year because he's going to be that goal line guy. Jonathan Stewart, let's just park an ambulance next to the field for him. Let's see. Tight ends were great. Defensive line, great. Love the running backs. I like the defense all around. And do I think... I'm not going to go ahead and talk about, do I think there's a hole because if someone gets injured. So I think what's going to end up happening to just about everybody. But I'm looking at sole draft strategy, and I'd say that, yeah, this is a very good draft. I like this draft.
I want to disclose to everybody, too, that the Amari Cooper pick, Tom absolutely loves Amari Cooper, and Tom's a guy who loves to take rookies. So when you're looking at Cooper and Aguilar on that team along with, a guy like Yeldon, those are all the types of picks that Tom Buckles loves to take. So puts a little bit of his personality on the team, even if he wasn't there to draft it himself. So, guys, that's the – oh, go ahead.
Let's say, yep, that's it. Fun.
Well, that's the silver division. Let's move over to the gray division. Let's keep her going. Tim,
are we over time?
We are, but let's keep it rolling and see how far we can push it. We need to test it. unless you guys can't.
Well, I kind of just blacked out this 30 minutes, so.
Okay. Do you have to call it?
I do.
Okay.
So, I apologize to the audience. I gotta run.
That's cool, Steve. Tim, are you cutting out too, or do you have time to stay and try to knock out the rest of the Gothic?
I can knock out the rest of the Gothic with you. Not a problem at all.
Okay, cool. Because I'd like to get these two, this show and then the Renaissance show, over with in possibly two shows. And then we can move on to some predictions and stuff because there's so much action coming up soon, guys. Steve, thanks a lot for helping us.
Yeah, tomorrow I'll make sure that I got time to do the whole thing. I just thought were doing division by division, but okay.
No, I thought we were – I was letting you guys go longer on it, but my intent was to do the conference, to just hammer the whole conference out, one for the Gothic today and Renaissance tomorrow. So
sure.
Thanks again.
All right. Take care, fellas.
Sure. See you, bud.
You as well. Take it easy.
What's that, Tim?
Well, I was just telling Steve to take it easy.
So, Tim, Gray Division. Let's go ahead and start out there. I'll take the first crack on this one. For me, Mark Kellett, he impressed me in this draft. Several times I saw Mark hop up and make his pick in a snap. And when you see a guy go right at it like that, that's confidence. He knows who he wants. And Mark put together an impressive squad this year. His starters are Big Ben at quarterback. He's got Lynch, Keenan Allen, Hopkins, and Bolden at offensive flex, in my opinion. Martellus Bennett of the Bears at tight end. Got a very good place kicker in Bailey of the Cowboys. He's got Dunlop as his defensive lineman. Great guy to have. Reggie Nelson as his defensive back. And then he filters in Mosley as his linebacker. Greenway. And then he's got Hayden from Cleveland and Ayadigbo as his defensive flex guys. So nice squad for the Raiders of Muskego. I may be buying Mango this year when Mark and I face off in our annual Mango Bowl bet.
Nice. All right, just taking a look at this team, I like it up until you start getting into the defense, and I mean, maybe it's just the Mad Dog Dynasty player in me, but I don't like the starting three DBs, and maybe he'll learn that. I mean, granted, he's got three great ones, but Joe Hayden's just usually not that fantasy producer. He's such a lockdown guy that no one goes near him. Let's see. C.J. Mosley, great. I'm going to butcher his name, but Inedigbo, great DB, but not the best out there. Reggie Nelson, great. And looking at what he's got on the bench down here, I mean, I'd rather see him start Anthony, you know, right off the bat. Move him up into the starting lineup. Richard Sherman, again, I just don't think that's a rosterable spot. I think he'll be dropping him pretty early on. A little too much defensive line for me, but other than that, I do like his draft. So great on offense, a little shaky on defense would be my scoop on this one.
Next up is the Old Helm Ogres, Brian Koch's team. Would you like to start that one? We'll just rotate back and forth.
Yeah, sounds good. Looking at the quarterbacks, I like the quarterbacks. Just think he went a little too deep with it. Blake Bortles, really not needed when you have Cam Newton and Matt Stafford on your team. Over here at running back, I do like the Lacy Gurley pickup. Duke Johnson, he's still not cleared to come back. Bishop Sankey probably won't keep the job the whole year, so a little shaky there. Moving on to wideouts, I think he was a bit sneaky here and also steady. With the way he picked these guys up. You got Mike Evans, Larry Fitzgerald, DeSean Jackson, Demaryius Thomas, and Sammy Watkins. Now, I think Sammy Watkins, yeah, they're saying he's a little bit farther back on the depth chart, but I bet you he catches on quick. And just the tandem of Mike Evans and Demaryius Thomas is very nice when you have Lacy, Gurley, and plus you have Fitzgerald and DeSean Jackson as your bench guys. That's kind of crazy. Eric Ebron and Zach Ertz, two young tight ends that I think are going to be good this year. Defensive line kickers, Gostkowski, who's got one of the better ones. Defensive line, two great offensive linemen. I was looking at both defensive linemen, excuse me. I was looking at both these guys, Ezekiel Ansah and Rob Ninkovich. Linebackers, I thought he could have picked a little better here. This is where, you know, I was really excited until I got into the linebackers. Don't get me wrong, I like Preston Brown, I like Bobby Wagner, Perry Riley, but Kevin Minter, the guy's unproven. I've had him on my team. Maybe I'm just a little sour. Christian Jones looks like he has the job. Donald Butler's getting old. And then down here in his defensive backs, Eric Berry. I like the guy. He's just getting long in the tooth. Norris Searcy, I'm pretty sure, is hurt right now. And Kenny Vaccaro, great solid pick there. So I was with him right up until the linebackers, but I guess you can't be perfect everywhere on a team.
Well, I think it's one of the teams that I like. Brian's squad, I like that they can start Stafford or Newton at quarterback, and I know from talking to Brian that he feels strongly that Newton is where the offense in Carolina is all going to get funneled now due to the injuries that they've experienced. So
definitely,
if that happens, if he's right, if his bet on Newton is correct, I definitely could see, you know, geez, he could pick up 15-plus points a game from Newton. They have Lacy, Evans, and Demaryius Thomas, like you said. Those are three stud starters, would probably start on almost every single team. And then Todd Gurley, and, you know, he's got some guys, like you mentioned, Watkins and Fitzgerald and Jackson, that can fill in while the Rams slow walk Gurley into action. But I think eventually, again, this is another if. It's if Cam Newton takes off like Brian, he put his chips on him. If Gurley takes off, he put a chip on Gurley. You're really talking about something good here. So,
definitely.
Gostkowski, best kicker in football right now. Ninkovich, fantastic at defensive line. And again, on defense, Vaccaro, Preston Brown, Bobby Wagner, Donald Butler, Christian Jones is going to be a sleeper for the Bears. They'll be on defense a lot. I think it's really good stuff. And I think early on, because we don't necessarily know some of the young guys on different people's benches, for me personally, I don't. You know, I look and see if a team's deep or they're not deep, but I do weight starting lineups a little bit more when we look at this stuff, because hypothetically, if your starters keep going, you really don't have to dip into your bench all that much. You got to cover the bye weeks, but if guys aren't getting injured, you know, injuries happen to everybody, but, you know, it's one of those things where you also pick guys up during the season, and every year guys that we think are going to be really good turn out to be crap. You know, a la last year, I had Vincent Jackson. I thought he was going to be fantastic. Guy had come off, you know, like, I don't know, something crazy, like 8-10 consecutive 1,000-yard, you know, 6-touchdown seasons. And then he just absolutely blew it. So you never know.
Happens every year.
Yeah. Well, next up is the Legion of Doom. This is a team that I do think is a playoff contender. Kirk Kujawa has Ryan at quarterback, Forsett, Antonio Brown, and Dez Bryant to go along with Andre Johnson. Kurt had the